You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Now I'm a union man, amazed at what I am. I say what I think, that the company stinks. Yes, I'm a union man. When we meet in the local hall, I'll be voting with them all. With a hell of a shout, it's out, brothers, out, and the rise of the company's fall. Oh, you don't get me, I'm part of the union. You don't get me, I'm part of the union. You don't get me, I'm part of the union. Till the day I die. Till the day I die.
As a union woman, I'm wise to the lies of the company spies.
And she don't.
Good morning, members. Welcome to the latest edition of MUA Fire Up Maritime Union. I'm David Ball. I'm Deputy Secretary of the Victorian Branch of the Maritime Union. I'm here with my co-host, Aaron Moon, our national organiser. How are you, Aaron?
Good, thanks, Dave. How are you?
Yeah, very good, mate. It's been another hectic fortnight in Melbourne with Stage 4 COVID restrictions coming into place.
Yes, it has, mate. It's really slowed the city down, mate. I've noticed that there's not much happening outside at all, even when you go down to the shops, if you have to, if it's very necessary. Thankfully, our branch is still operating, albeit remotely for the largest part, and the state government has also seen fit to allow union officials permits for work, so that way they can continue to attend site visits and also handle industrial matters as they arise over the coming weeks and months of this Stage 4 implementation. How are things going out in Geelong, mate, and the regions?
Well, we're living the high life down here. We've only got Stage 3 restrictions down here, so a little less restrictive, if to want of a better word, but everyone is wearing their masks. I'm wearing my masks. I've actually been quite lucky that I'm working in an office on my own 99% of the time, so I don't have to wear a mask inside. I rarely go to the shops. I'm a very spoilt person in that my wife likes to do all the grocery shopping and everything, so I don't bother doing that. So I haven't had to wear a mask very much at all. And when I have had to wear one, I've found it very uncomfortable, and I'm glad that I don't have to wear one all the time. But we're also here with our producer, Annie. How are you, Annie?
I'm all right. I'm okay, yeah. Getting along, doing my stuff, but keeping inside.
It's difficult for everybody, these latest restrictions. Are you finding, you're going okay running the show from home?
Oh, yeah, doing the shows are okay. You just got to keep your spirits up, really, because if you live alone, you don't see anybody much. And I'm in the middle of doing massive knitting projects to keep my sanity in place.
Oh, that sounds like a plan. I'm not sure whether the next person I'll introduce will be doing much knitting, but I know as a union organiser, he's very happy that he can still visit the sites that he's responsible for. And I know he's been doing a fair bit of that with Patrick's. Robert Casper Lumsden, how are you today?
Good, thanks, David. Thank you for the introduction.
Good on you, mate.
Well, yeah. Thanks, mate.
There's a lot happening.
You talk about those masks and how tough they are to wear and all that. And, you know, it might be a bit hard for us, but there are a lot of people who they certainly do it a bit tougher than us having to chuck a mask on. And we're certainly in a better spot than some of those that are lying in ICU beds and the like and on ventilators and all that sort of thing. So important that as a community and that we all stick together and we all actually do the right thing and wear our masks and do that so we can get out of these restrictions and stop putting people into those ICU beds and on ventilators.
Absolutely. That is obviously the aim of our community. And just on the topic of masks, the MUA do have some masks arriving. I reckon by next week, they're going to be posted out to all our members via the national office. So look for your mask to come in the mail, members, and wear it proudly. We hope that you won't be wearing them for too long, but obviously you will be for the next 4 or 5 weeks.
The, be a fashion statement, Dave.
Yeah, that's the truth of the matter. People have been making them fashion statements, which is a good thing. It shows people are alive and kicking and have got their sense of humour. The ports are really important, though, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah, they are. They've particularly here in Melbourne, we're the largest import container terminals in the country, and it's obviously a significant part of the Victorian economy, and maintaining that, and ensuring that we maintain the shelves to be stocked, because as we know, a lot of our stuff that we purchase from the shelves is imported by our wharfies down here in Melbourne. So they are the critical part of the supply chain. And thankfully, we were able to get in early, particularly as a union, and build up the health and safety measures that we have in the port. And we haven't seen a confirmed positive case spread through the walls like we have in distribution centres as yet. So touch wood, and hopefully we can continue that good record as we move forward through these later restrictions.
But it's right what Aaron's saying. The supply chain, it is critical that the ports keep operating, and it's been quite astounding that we've gone through all of this time without a positive actually from the ports. You know, we've had the odd truck driver around that, you know, but the actual workplace themselves, as far as up to today anyway, we haven't had a positive, which has just been outstanding, because we've been able to keep that supply chain moving, and as a critical part of the Victorian government infrastructure, basically, we are. So to all the workforces out there, you know, well done on being able to maintain your social distancing and maintain yourselves in the negative vein to continue to be able to work, because every time someone does the wrong thing, it not only impacts them and their family, it impacts the workplace, and then it just keeps on going, the actual impact that it would have. So it's a massive thank you to all of our members that have been a major part in assisting the port to be able to continue to operate.
And although our office, we're not encouraging our members to come into our office, it is sort of technically still open, isn't it, Aaron, on a level where members can get access to all the officials 24 hours a day, and the admin staff are also available?
Yeah, that's right, Dave. So we've had to remove to remote operations for everything. Yeah, so all of our staff, the hardworking backbone of this union, are all now working from home. They can still be contacted via phone. So if you dial the office number, you'll still get hold of somebody that can assist you with any inquiries you may have. On top of that, the officials are, as they always are, available 24/7. So you just give their number a buzz. I think most of our members have them. I know that I get calls all hours of the day, so and I imagine you guys do as well. But yeah, the office will still be running and functioning as a union. Just unfortunately, getting in there in person is the only thing we're unable to do at the moment. But all other functions are still going ahead.
No, that's great. So there's been some industrial action down on the waterfront, or there's building up to some in the terminals. Obviously, DP World have had protected action going on for a couple of weeks. Could you just give us a quick update on the situation VICT?
Yeah, so we'll go VICT first. So VICT, we are in the process of having some delegates elected, so that way we can progress the negotiations there. We're hoping to meet with the company again shortly. Members might remember that there was a vote for their agreement proposed by the company but not endorsed by the union. That was voted down just recently by a large majority. We're hearing 92%, but the company has refused to actually release the numbers. But it's a good show of solidarity and a good display of unity of the workforce to vote down that agreement and tell the company that they definitely deserve an agreement that matches everybody else in the industry. And you just said that there's been industrial action at DP World. That's the case. Obviously, there have been work bans and stuff. The terminal is still working. It's just a couple of hours here and there that we're slowing it down to ensure that we can bring the company to the table. Those guys have been in negotiations for almost 2 years, and when we thought we had an agreement late last year, the company reneged on everything. So it's unfortunate we've had to come back to this stage, but we are making some progress there in the Part A. And then once that's complete, hopefully we can get Part B knocked over. But there is industrial action happening there. And
edition of MUA Fire Up Maritime Union. I'm David Ball. I'm Deputy Secretary of the Victorian Branch of the Maritime Union. I'm here with my co-host Aaron Moon, our national organiser. How are you, Aaron?
And I think you're about to ask the next question, hey, to our special guest.
A special guest. Well, I'm not sure Casper actually qualifies as a special guest based on the fact that he is an official responsible for this radio show to go to air every fortnight. So we're not going to call him a guest. We're going to call him a participant. Anyway, Casper, we know you're looking after Patrick's, mate, and it's a pretty exciting time when you go into an EBA discussions and it ends up with protected action. What's going on down at Patrick's, mate?
I'll run you through the process, Dave, so those that are listening get an understanding of how we've got to where we are today. So for quite some time now, Patrick's management have been speaking with the union about a rollover in the background and what it would take to facilitate that occurring. So there was some back and forth between the parties. Patrick eventually, we went back to Patrick with a, they were quite concerned about the pandemic and said, okay, we'll go back to them with a 12-month rollover. which they knocked on the head. They wanted a four-year rollover. They put one to us, a four-year rollover, but put it in not just it'll be a rollover agreement. And this, there was, it was quite detailed and in a, and was sent, it was put to us as take this in a package or not at all. And the way it was put to us, we simply couldn't accept it in the formation it was put to us. We simply couldn't accept that. And so once that process had stopped, and then it came down to a log of claims, a normal bargaining process. So the MUA put their log of claims to Patrick's, and Patrick's then put a document to the union, and the document was a whole new agreement based on the way they see the world going forward. And it's fair to say it is, it's hard to just put a word to it. It's such a move away from what the current document is. It's just a entirely different document. And there's so many things in it that are an attack on the workers' rights and conditions that have been fought for, particularly since those were around in 98 and came back in the gate. And the conditions that have been fought for since that day to get to where we are today, to have a document put to us that just rewinds the clock all the way back. And it's, so it is a massive attack on our conditions. We've had some meetings with them.
What are they asking? What are they saying? Is it
some of the things in it, Annie? Some of the things. So all the terminals are different, and they've put one roster. They just want this one roster to fit, and it doesn't work that way in reality. And they've added on a lot more weekend days, and the way that roster's been put, there's totally irregular work through it. So it would be a move away from the family, the balance of family and work life, to it simply you would just be at home waiting for a phone call to go to work. And their consultation and change clause has been removed, the conditions around it. So the way they've written their clause, it would mean that they would have the ability to consult with the workforce, tell them, outline what they've, the change they want to put in place, and then simply 21 days later implement that change without any prospect of us being able to challenge it. And they would have followed their agreement to the letter to that, which would mean that, and you know, your roster is everything. It's what you work, what you live by. And it would mean that people would have to get behind on hours on this, on the roster they've put forward. You'd have to owe hours. So that would mean they would have the ability to go and consult with the workforce, tell them we're going to change all your RDOs to off available so we can get back those hours. And you'd simply be that would just be a terrible, terrible thing to happen to the workforce.
It sounds
also it means that Bunnings does this as well. This is a thing where you owe them hours, and the hours can be at any time. So any penalty rates or anything like that is out the windows, right?
That's right. It sounds like Patrick's is trying to create a workforce that just has to come to work regardless. Otherwise, they're going to lose money.
And it's a total, the way that roster's set up, and they want to remove it's got a grade two permanent category of employment, and they want to grandfather that clause, that workforce, and just move them on, and they just want their permanence that will owe them hours forever, and they want a casual workforce. So it's a total...
And does that mean that they don't recognise any skill sets, etc.?
They recognise the skill sets, but it's what they've set up would be a totally irregular roster with a move back to casualisation. And part of the thing that we've fought for over the last few agreements, we've gone from a 4-hour minimum to a 7-hour minimum to an 8-hour minimum, and they want to drag that all the way back to a 4-hour minimum for PGEs. They want to remove selection criteria around training and upgrades, and they'll just decide who gets what and when they get it. They want to remove, so in our agreements we have a Part A section, and we have a Part B. The Part A is generic, which overarches all the four ports around the country, and your Part B section of your agreement relates to your port, which is specific to your port. Patrick's want to remove that and not have that. They want a reduction of They want a reduction of ERC paid meetings, which are integral to the continuance of the and the consultation between the workforce and the local management. They want a reduction of paid training days. They want labour reviews to be whenever, whereas right now they're done twice yearly. There's a whole removal of conditions that were being fought for a long time. And the funny thing about the roster change for me is that there's no real need for it. The work that it actually works. So for them to come along and to say, we want this one ideal roster would mean that the way it's set up with all the added weekend days into it, if you get one weekend where it's quiet, you get dropped off, you all of a sudden owe 36,000 because there's not really, there's only four possible days in these 7 weeks on a weekend that you wouldn't be available. So every other weekend day you'd be available. So the only way to pay back the ads would be during the week. So you'd finish up working 3 or 4 days to pay back those hours you've lost on a weekend. So it's a real attack on the...
It's like being an indentured slave.
Well, it really is. And it's just such a removal of what we've fought for and the conditions that, you know, it takes a long time to get to a really good spot. And that takes agreement after agreement after agreement. And we go back, into the 20s and 30s and 40s where people really starved. They went out on strike for 6 weeks at a time just to get a condition where their families genuinely starved. And it's taken a long time to get to them. We had the strike in 98 where the lockout of 98, which, and then since then we've, you know, bit by bit, we've got back to what we consider to be conditions that are fair and reasonable for everyone. And all of a sudden we have a management now that wants to come and just pull the rug from underneath all of that. So and that's why we've now got to a protected action ballot. We felt that was once they presented us with this document, we were left with no other option but to go to the Fair Work Commission, where we argued for 23 questions and we got the Fair Work Commission to tick off on all those. So that's now been mailed out to all members, Patrick members around the country.
And what are we asking of all of those members when they receive their ballot, Rob?
To tick yes to the 23 questions, Aaron, and send it back as soon as possible. So, and we've been doing worksite visits. Aaron and myself have been down regularly to Patrick's in Melbourne to encourage members to vote yes to all 23 and send a message to the company that the attack on their conditions will not be stood for. And we want to send them a strong message that we are up for the fight if they continue down that path. We think that if we put the ballot in and we prefer not to go to protected action anyway, it's not something we take lightly, because when we go to protected action, that means our members aren't being paid for that time off. So,
it's interesting because during COVID, it really proved how important the people on the wharves are, and they still act as if they've got the strength, you know, that they're the most important people in the world.
It's funny, yeah. you say that, and yet we know what I'll speak generally about what the right-wing media will do to us if we take protected action. They'll, you know, call greedy wharfies doing it. But at the end of the day, we're the ones that keep the joint going. We're the ones that the workers that turn up and go to work, they're the ones that create all the bonuses for the people who sit in their ivory towers and get all the credit for all the work that's done on the ground by people. And so it is important that we send a message to the company that we're not going to cop it, that we will go to protected action if need be, and we want everyone to vote yes to those 23 questions that have been put and get it back to the and get it back in the reply paid envelope to the Australian Electoral Commission as soon as possible. So on that, we had some people haven't received their ballots as yet, and there was an email sent out today, which I sent out to the membership at East Swanson Dock for those that haven't received it, what they need to do. And there's a phone number there you can actually ring the returning officer directly in Sydney and get that fixed up straight away. So,
if anybody hasn't received their ballot by the time they're hearing this, they definitely should refer back to that email and make sure they get a new ballot.
That's right. So I said that on.
Well, that's on Monday. That's a great summary you've given there, Casper. So all those Patrick Warfies, they all know what they need to do. They need to vote to 23 questions. Vote them all, yes. Show management that we're united. We're united in our struggle to maintain and improve our conditions on the waterfront. We will never go back to what we lost all those years ago. It's taken a long time to get to where we are, and we're proud of where we are. And great work, Casper, and thank you, Aaron. And that's our show for the week. We'll see you again in a fortnight's time.
Thanks, everyone.
Stay safe, everybody.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.